We are going to continue going through the books of the Bible. We are up to 2 John, and so we're going to talk about that this morning. It's a very short letter, though 3 John is shorter than that one. It's a letter that's designed to encourage Christians to stand firm in God's commandments and not to allow false teachers to interfere with doing what God wants us to do. The letter did not circulate widely when the New Testament was first being written, not as widely as other New Testament books. Part of that may not be so much that it wasn't distributed, as we don't have any much records of it being quoted. But then if you think about it, you got a short book. How often would you quote a verse necessarily from that particular book, if it was shorter than most of the other ones? Despite that, though, when we do find records of 2 John in historical writings, early Christian writings and things like that, there are no controversies about the book. Not until later. Not until you get 200, 400, 500 years after the book was written. Early disciples all accepted this was John's book. It was only when people started forgetting the origins of the letter, they started asking questions and started trying to find problems with it. But basically, you don't find too many people saying, no, this is not John. The style is too much like what John wrote. Both 2 John and 3 John have very similar styles in their writings. They're considered to be written by the same author. And the style of 2 John is, in particular, is very similar to 1 John. And 1 John is very similar to the letter of John. It's obvious that the same author was writing all the books that are involved. One of the things that's interesting is that when we get to the beginning of 2 John, and the very first verse, get my Bible to flip over there. It says, "The elder to the chosen lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all those who know the truth." The author calls himself the elder. But as we read through the book, we realize the man who's writing this is writing with an authority greater than, say, like an elder in a local church. He gives commands to those who are in other churches. He's not just looking at the church that he's residing at the time. Now, it's possible that John was an elder in a church. After all, Peter was an elder in 1 Peter chapter 5. And starting with verse 1. 1 Peter chapter 5, starting with verse 1, it says, "Therefore I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed." Peter was an elder. It's not unusual or would not be odd to think that and know that John himself was also an elder in a church. He also might be calling himself elder or the elder because he's the oldest apostle still living. After all, this letter is probably written towards the end of John's life. Probably in the time frame near when Revelation was written. Most of the other apostles have been killed. And he's probably the last apostle and refers to himself that way as well, having outlived the others. The author does not name himself, but that's not unusual for how the number of the apostles wrote, especially John. You look at the book, other books that we say are written by John. Other than Revelation, the Gospel of John does not name John. Always calls himself the disciple whom Jesus loved. We know it's John by cross-referencing it to the other Gospels and finding it was John who was involved at that time. 1 John does not name him. 2 John does not have a name, and 3 John does not have a name. This is a typical way. Most people believe it's a way of showing humility. to not name yourself in the book that you're writing. Some people also criticize and say, well, maybe not 2 John because, or 2 John is not written by John because, well, after all, John talks so much about love in John and in 1 John. And in 2 John, if you get to verse 10, it sounds so strong. It says, if anyone comes to you and not bring this teaching, do not receive him to your house and do not give him a greeting. And he said, well, that doesn't sound like John. But if you're thinking that way, then you've forgotten about who John is. Take a look at Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3 and in verse 17. Mark chapter 3 verse 17, it says, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to them he gave the name Barjones, which means sons of thunder. James and his brother John were both nicknamed sons of thunder. Well, why would somebody give somebody that type of nickname? Well, you can give an example of that in Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9 and verse 54 says, when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? Somebody slighted Jesus. What's their first reaction? Let's just wipe them off the face of the earth. This is the type of person John used to be. So when John comes on strong, and someone says, well, that's John's not John's character. No, John has a strong character. He strongly loves, but he also strongly is in discipline. He comes across the same way. Now, as far as the date of the book, as I mentioned, most people put it towards the end of John's life. We know, for instance, Revelation is probably written somewhere roughly around 80, 92, 96, somewhere in that time frame. Most people place this book somewhere just before Revelation, so somewhere around 80, 90s, usually between 80, 85, and 95, somewhere in that time frame. But most people kind of gravitate around 90. There's nothing really particular here that we can pinpoint other than it does mention Gnosticism coming on strongly, some of the beliefs there. As far as the audience goes, it either is a specific unnamed woman and her children, because it says to the chosen lady or to the elect lady and her children. So either he is... has a particular person in mind that he's addressing this letter to, or to a church and its members. Those are the two most popular beliefs. One of the possibilities is that when it says to the chosen lady, the actual name there is Saria. Is the name that's there, and it is an actual name that somebody uses. There is a name that they named their daughter's lady. Syria is an actual name. And what's the reason for this is the early translations, like in the Syriac version, actually doesn't translate this as lady, it actually translates this as the name Syria. The Arabic translations also do the same thing. So some people think, well, what this letter actually is written to is a woman whose name is Syria, happens to be translated lady, and so to the chosen Syria and her children. Another possibility, the reason for the church view, mostly comes from the last verse of the book. In verse 13, it says, the children of your chosen sister greet you. And so those reading that one says, well, maybe he's talking about church. It sounds more like he's referring to the church as a woman and saying that the children of the other church are sending greetings as well. It really doesn't make too much difference as far as the content of the book, but that is, you know, the various debates that are involved in it. Now, as far as the book itself, it basically falls out into two halves. We have the first half talking about the fact that we need to walk in God's commands. We have a salutation like most letters do at the beginning, saying who it's from. We've read verse 1 already. But in verse 2, it says, "For the sake of the truth which abides in us and will be with us forever, grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love." It states that this woman is well known. She's well loved, as were her children. And the cause of that is their commonality with the truth. They all have a sincere love for the truth. In fact, in verse 4, it says, I was very glad to find some of your children walking in truth, just as we have received the commandment to do from the Father. John's basically saying, I was pleasantly surprised to find some of your children, some of her sons particularly. In the Greek, it comes out more as saying sons. Finding some of their sons walking the path of truth. It is always good to see other Christians who are living faithfully and doing what is right. And so he says in verse 5 and 6, "Now I ask you, lady, not as though I were writing to you a new commandment, but one which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this love which we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment which you have heard from the beginning, that you should walk in it." Here then lies the main theme of the book. You are following the truth. That's what we have as commonality. Your children follow the truth. You're all following the commandments. And basically the idea is love is following God's commandments. We have so many people today that teach differently. They say, Christianity is all about love, and it is. But they lost sight of what John says. Love is walking according to God's commandments. He says, this is a commandment we've had from the beginning. Going back to the Gospel of John, John 13, and in verse 35, it says, "By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." In John 15, and in verse 12, "This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you." In verse 17 of the same chapter, it says, "This is a commandment, this is I command you, that you love one another." All the way through, Jesus has been emphasizing, especially towards the end of his life, we have to love one another. Again, in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 7, it says, "Beloved, I'm not writing a new commandment to you, but an old commandment which you have had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you have heard. On the other hand, I'm writing to you a new commandment which you have to you because true in him and because the darkness is passing away and to the true light is already shining." This is not something new. This is something Christ has always said. We need to love one another. But notice also what John is saying. When we talk about love, we're not talking about some feeling. We're not talking about how we feel at the moment. It's something you choose to do. That's what love is. It's a choice to do what God commands. Going back to John chapter 14 again, and in verse 15, John chapter 14, and in verse 15, it says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." It's that simple. Our love is shown by our choice to do what Christ told us to do. And then love is then expressed by following what Christ told us to do. Going back to 1 John again, chapter 2, starting with verse 3. "By this we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. The one who says, I have come to know him, and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Whoever keeps his word, the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner in which he walked. It is, that, again, that simple. If you really love God, you'll do what he says. In 1 John chapter 5, starting with verse 2. By this we know the love of, that we love the children of God, when we love God and observe his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. How do you know if you love your fellow brethren? This is something, again, people miss. Because they think about their interactions with one another in terms of their feelings for one another. How do you know you love the brethren? Because you're doing God's commandments. Which one of those commandments is to love one another? It's when you have something in commonality, when you're working together, you're sharing the same beliefs and striving for the same goals. That's an expression of love. But in the letter to Second John, we have to understand that not everybody who names themselves a Christian really is. There are false teachers out there. This woman, the chosen lady, has a good reputation for following the truth. But John warns her, he says, for many deceivers have gone out into the world. Those who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves that you do not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. We got to watch out. There are people walking around not teaching the truth. And if we start following those false teachers, we will lose what we have gained. In fact, John goes on to say, anyone who does not goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God, and the one who abides in the teaching but has both the Father and the Son. Here again is the test. Does a person follow after God? Do you have commonality with them? Are they abiding in the teachings of Christ or not? He gives one example of that, of whether Jesus come in the flesh. This is one of the aspects that we know of Gnosticism. Gnosticism basically had the concept or the philosophy that anything connected to the physical world was sinful. And so therefore they concluded that Jesus could not come in the physical flesh because then he would have been sinful, and he's not sinful. And so they just said he was, maybe today we call him holograms, he was just an illusion that looked like, you know, a three-dimensional illusion. It looked like he was there, but he really wasn't there. This is a lie. It's important for us to know that Jesus came physically to this world. Because a key part of the fact that Christ was here is the fact that Christ died. If it was all an illusion, the significance of what Christ did for us on our behalf becomes illusionary also. So therefore, one of the things that John's urging is, says, don't lose what you have. One of the first things when you're dealing with a false teacher is you have to make sure of your own salvation. You cannot just wander after whoever teaches you and you happen to like what he says. The responsibility for doing what is right belongs to each of us as individuals. Take a look at Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12 says, so then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not just in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. You have to be responsible. You cannot get to heaven and say, well, so-and-so taught me this. You have to work out your own salvation. You have to check things yourself. Just because I'm up here preaching doesn't, I know I'm trying to teach the truth. But ultimately, in the end, you have to check it yourself. And a person who does not stay in Christ's teachings does not have God. I don't know how many times I run across people that they talk about people in the denominations and stuff like that as if they are saved Christians. If they're not following what Christ taught, they don't have God. Going back to John chapter 14 and verse 23. Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him. And we will come to him and make our abode with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the words which you hear is not mine, but the Father who sent me." Anyone who does not keep Christ's word does not have Christ. It doesn't matter what they're claiming. It doesn't matter what they delude themselves with. The fact is, if you love Christ, you keep his word. And if you have a teacher coming in, teaching something that's false doctrine, and it's not what Christ says, it doesn't matter what they claim. It's what they're teaching. And they don't have Christ because they're not teaching what Christ taught. And so he tells her what not to do. It says, if anyone, in verse 10 of 2 John, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him in your house or give him a greeting, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. You don't encourage a false teacher. Now, we're not talking about someone who just, you know, has not learned something yet or has got a point wrong that needs to be straightened out. We're talking about someone who's out teaching falsely, teaching something contrary to what God says, and it doesn't matter what the truth actually says. They don't care about the truth. Anyone teaching you that you don't have to keep Christ's commands should not be welcomed in your house. Take a look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 5. So after listing out characteristics of people, the last times and the problems there are, it says that they have holding a form of godliness, although they deny its power. Avoid such men as these. They might look like Christians, they might talk as if they're Christians, but they're denying its power over their lives. And the conclusion is avoid them. This is what John's telling the lady. Don't have them into your house. That encourages it. That looks like you support it. Don't even give them greeting. Don't make it look like you agree with what they're teaching. You don't have to give encouragement to someone who's not teaching the truth. To do so would be to share in what he's doing. And so we get down to the very end. In 2 John, verses 12 and 13, it says, "Though I have many things to write to you, I do not want to do so with paper and ink. I hope to come to you and speak face to face, so that your joy may be full. The children of your chosen sister greet you." Love to know what all the other things that John wanted to discuss. We don't have them. He said, there's things I want to talk face to face. I want to talk personally with you. And it's just not suitable to write it down. But we do have this much. And even though it's a short letter, and it's very pointed on one topic, or two topics, how you want to look at it, still yet it's an important letter. Because we still today deal with false teachers. We still deal with people who do not follow the truth. While we need and have to follow the truth. I hope you think about these things. I'd like to offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God, I would like to praise their brethren on their behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected?